been a hell of a morning, all right? I think I've run into every bad thing that could have happened, except when I got here, and damn, I'm really happy. Kiana, it's really good to see you again. Henry, it's really good to have you throwing around over there. All right, and for you, welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate, as I made clear, I think, and we have a packed show today, so let's get going. At the back end of the show, we're going to hear an important statement from Dolly Veal from the emergency campaign to free Iran's political prisoners. Stay tuned for that. It's really important. Before that, we'll hear a clip from the Revolution Nothing Less show on International Revolutionary May 1st, 2021. We are human beings. We refuse to accept slavery in any form. And following the show and opening the show up, yeah, I don't want to follow it up, opening the show up, we'll be talking with Carl Dix, a revolutionary communist and a follower of Bob Avakian, and we'll be talking about guilty, guilty, guilty. That's right, the conviction of the pig who murdered George Floyd and why the whole damn system is guilty and what we need to do about it. Carl Dix, how are you?
I'm doing good, Michael.
Good, good. Tell people, for people who don't know, because every now and then there's a bunch of people that come on here when they hear the show's on and they don't necessarily know you, but I want people to know this. Carl Dix is a revolutionary communist and a follower of Bob Avakian. And Carl, you know, I have to say, every time I have you on the show, I learn something. People comment about learning something, and I think what you're doing is extremely important. So we're going to jump into this, okay? Basically, there's a whole thing going on right now in the country, in the world, that people, you know, that people are just being, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's shifting and shaping, and all the things are happening that are good, things are happening that are bad. And you are in the middle of something that's really important right now. And I think it's actually not new for you, because you're always in the middle of something that's really important that's happening right now. But right now, Carl, I want to jump in right away for you to tell us a little bit about this man, George Floyd. Who was he? And why is he important? Why are we talking about him?
Look, George Floyd was a 40-something-year-old black man. He had his ups and downs in his life, but he was a human being. And that was something that was brought forward in the testimony in the trial. He was somebody who had struggled with addiction, was trying to overcome it. There were people in his life who loved him. There were brothers who learned from him how to honor and love their mother. He was the older brother, and he had guided them in that direction. He had a thing for youth. He was a former athlete, and he loved organizing youth into athletic endeavors and trying to put together leagues. But none of that mattered when he was confronted by Derek Chauvin and those other three pigs, because all he was a large black man who needed to be put in his place. And we saw what that came down to. We saw the 9.5-minute video. We saw the response of the people on the scene begging the cops to stop killing this man. We heard George Floyd himself narrating his murder until he couldn't speak anymore because they had snuffed the life out of him. And then that video went around the country and around the world, which gave George Floyd another level of importance, because he became his murder by police became a spark for a beautiful outpouring of resistance all across the country and all around the world. It concentrated for people the brutality and terror that the police inflict on black people. And I have been involved in this for a while. I co-founded the October 22nd Coalition to Stop Police Brutality, Repression, and the Criminalization of a Generation back in 1996. I have worked with families who have lost loved ones at the hands of the police for decades. I've dealt with a lot of these trials. This trial was different than almost every other trial. of a killer cop that I've dealt with. It was different, one, because it was unusual in the fact that there was a trial, because almost always when police murder a black or brown person, there is no trial. It gets stamped as justifiable homicide, and they move on. But they weren't able to do that this time. And we should be clear, they weren't able to do it because of what we did, the way that we took to the streets, the way that we connected the murder of George Floyd to the murder of Breonna Taylor, to the murder of Elijah McClain, and to the murders of Daniel Prude and all the other people being brutalized and murdered by the police. The way that we went to deeper questions, like the white supremacy that underlay the way the police get away with brutality and murder against people of color. And that presented the authorities with the need to not only put this guy on trial, but to actually put on a case against him. Because often when they feel forced to put a killer cop on trial, the prosecutors act like they forget how to prosecute. But this time they brought forward the eyewitnesses who saw it, who could back up the video. They brought forward expert testimony from medical people who could speak to what exactly happened, what caused the death of George Floyd. And they even brought in higher-ranking police officials who talked about how what Derek Chauvin did to George Floyd was wrong and criminal, which was correct. But then they also tried to throw some stuff in the game by saying, this isn't what our cops do. That is not true, and I'm going to come back to that in a minute. But it was our resistance, our determination, our struggle that forced them to put him on trial and not to try to rig the game so he could walk free. This time, the cop killer cop didn't go free. And it was really sweet to see the killer cop handcuffed and walked off to jail, because usually when they're forced to put a cop on trial, it doesn't go that way, and the killer cop walks free or gets away with a slap on the wrist. But this one got convicted on all three charges that were put up against him. And this was a people's victory. Now, you could say, well, his guilt was crystal clear. We saw the video. But this is America. There was a video of the cops beating Rodney King almost 30 years ago. Those cops walked in the state trial. There was a video of Eric Garner being choked to death by the cops, telling them, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. The cops who did that never got punished. So it took something beyond a video that established the guilt. Clearly, it took massive outpouring from people. But there's another guilt in here, which we have to really focus in on, grab a hold of, and not let go of. And that is the guilt of the whole damn system. This system has cops out there inflicting the kind of brutality that Derek Chauvin demonstrated. Derek Chauvin was not a rogue cop. He was not a bad apple who betrayed the mission of the police. He concentrated the mission of the police. It's like the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian says in Basics, the role of the police is not to serve and protect the people, it is to serve and protect the system that rules over the people, to enforce the relations of exploitation and oppression, the conditions of poverty, misery, and degradation into which the system has cast people and is determined to keep people in. The law and order the police are about, with all of their brutality and murder, is the law and the order that enforces all this oppression and madness. That's Bob Avakian, the revolutionary leader, the leader of a movement for an actual revolution, and the architect of a framework, a new framework for human emancipation. That's a leader that people need to know about. But that's an important lesson from this trial that we need to get, because we're being told something else. We're being told that, well, we'll pass the George Floyd Act in Congress, and that'll deal with this problem. Or we'll have a conversation about police terror, and through that we'll deal with it. That we've reached a turning point for police reform in this country. And let me just tell you this. Whatever law you pass, whatever officials you put in office, whatever policies you think you get instituted, none of that will stop police brutalizing and murdering people, because that's what this system has them out there to do. They told us we needed to elect more black officials. We got a black president. The police still kill about 1,000 people each and every year that Obama was the president, and almost none of them got punished for it. Progressive DAs can't deal with this. We got to deal with the whole system. We got to get rid of it, and that's going to take a revolution. Nothing less.
You know, Carl, just to back up a little bit, you know, there is this point about that I think you began to hint at, but there's really something people really have to understand. What's concentrated in what you're talking about is actually a question of humanity versus inhumanity, torture. You know, you look at that and what is going on? I mean, when you look at basically the screen of, you know, what was happening to George Floyd, it should have made you feel sick at your stomach. It should have made you incredibly angry and searching out for a way to stop all this. And I think it's really important that people consider this, because it's not just, oh, it's one cop who was just like, you know, he was a bad cop and he did this and he did that. But, you know, we can roll on and there's good cops and all this stuff. And actually, the very way the system is built actually incorporates and brings into this whole point about humanity versus inhumanity. And the inhuman people, the people who are deemed inhuman, are always the people that stand not on the side of the rulers, but on the other side of things. Let's talk about this a little.
Okay, I mean, look. Watching that video, you see Chauvin kneeling on George Floyd's neck, listening to people tell him that you're killing that man, listening to Floyd saying, I can't breathe. And you see no concern whatsoever for the life of George Floyd, no concern for his humanity, not one bit. And then you have the other three cops while all this is going on, two of whom help hold George Floyd down, and the third of them sees to it that none of the anguished onlookers who were doing what they felt they could to try to stop this slow-motion murder, he was making sure that they didn't disturb Derek Chauvin as he callously went about the task of snuffing the life of George Floyd out. And this really concentrates what the role that the police play, because you could go through all kinds of murders of people by police, and you can see you don't get the same slow motion video of it being done slowly and deliberately, but it comes down to the same thing. It comes down to viewing people as less than human and people who need to be kept in their place. But you got to look at what's behind that. What's behind that is a system that has no use for broad sections of people, that can no longer profitably exploit them, and hates and fears them, because they know what kind of response people have made in the past. They remember the 1960s and the uprisings of black people. So they need a police force that is ready, willing, and eager to suppress the people that they fear and hate. And that's what the police do. That's what their role is. And it's a role within the system. So, no, you're not going to abolish the police in this system, because this system needs the police, and they need them to be the brutal enforcers that they are. Mm-hmm. You're not going to reform them into some people's security force that works in the interest of the people. You got to get rid of this system, and the only way to do that is through an actual revolution, a revolution that is not only needed, but is possible, and I can talk about that some.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. There's just a couple other things I want to come at you with, you know, because, and you started to speak to this, but, you know, I can't, as I was preparing for this show, as I'm reading this in the days that preceded it, all of this, you know, it comes back to, you just keep thinking about this. I mean, all over the world, You know, first off, the fact that people are here and all over the world in their millions came into the streets to demand justice night after night for what, based on what happened there, how this man was killed. And when you see the pictures, when you see the picture of that cop standing there with his kneeling down and just sort of smiling, that greasy kind of, just the kind of thing that wants you to, yeah, you're just going up and, I'll leave it alone because I don't want to get in trouble. But, you know, you're looking at this and the inhumanity, the vicious fascist, approach to things. And people all over the world in their millions came into the streets to demand justice on this. And it's really something that I think we need to talk about a little bit more, because we're talking about people standing up against murderous repression in order to do so, in order to stand with the people who are oppressed and to stand with the people who want to stop that. Can we talk about that just a little bit more?
Okay, well, look, this video and this murder was like a punch to the gut and a slap in the face. And people responded to that en masse all across the country and around the world. And they came into the streets essentially saying, I cannot live in a world. I can't stand by and see this go down. I don't want to live in a world where people are treated like this because of the color of their skin. And they were also serious about that and searching for how do we end this. And there was great determination and there was also courage, because I was in several protests that were viciously attacked by the police. People were beaten, gassed, arrested for standing up and saying, the cops got to stop murdering black people. Some people even lost their lives, because we got to remember up in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where Kyle Rittenhouse murdered several of the Black Lives Matter protesters and then was allowed to walk through the police lines and get in his car and drive back across the state line and get away until he was arrested a few days later and now faces charges for that. But this was heroic, and in a certain sense, this was unprecedented. This is something that definitely hasn't happened in decades here in this country. And it's very important for people to remember and realize that, because this is what led to the people's victory of this cop getting convicted. That's one reason they got to remember it. But the other reason they have to remember it is, look, I raised a couple of times, we need a revolution to end the system that's responsible for this horror of police getting away with murder. And when I raise that, I often hear people saying, nice idea, Carl, but it can't happen. It's not possible. Well, think about May 20th of last year, a few days before George Floyd was murdered. And what if I said to you, we need to have millions of people go into the street calling for an end to murder by police and calling for an end to white supremacy? You'd have probably told me, that can't happen, Carl. That's impossible. That's not going to happen. But then George Floyd is murdered and millions of people are in the streets night after night, day after day. My point here is that what often looks impossible becomes possible and actually happens if things are worked on in the right kind of direction. And that's the way we have to approach this question of revolution, because the reason revolution is possible is shown by the potential that people displayed in the streets last year. And these weren't just people worried about one case. These were people worried about and refusing to live in a society where this happens day after day after day, and searching for the way out. That kind of power, that kind of determination, that kind of courage is something that could be a big part of a movement for an actual revolution that numbers in the millions being unleashed in this country. The other important part to that is leadership, organization and leadership. And there is a force that is mobilizing people today for an actual revolution, working on that front, working to bring that forward. And there is leadership for that movement. And I'm talking about Bob Avakian, the leader of the Revolutionary Communist Party, the architect of the new communism. Because look, people say, well, we can't make revolution, it's too hard. Avakian is the kind of leader who has dug into the question, could we make an actual revolution in this country? How would we go about it? How would we gather the forces? Who are the forces? How would we deal with the fact that this system's got a lot of power? How would we deal with the fact that people are divided, fighting against each other, some of the key people who need to be involved in this? Some of the people in the ghettos and barrios of this country, they're fighting each other. How would we deal with that? Avakian has addressed all of those questions. He has a talk that he gave, why we need an actual revolution and how we could really make revolution. And he looks at the horrors that this system inflicts on people here in this country and around the world and shows that those horrors are all built into the framework and fabric of this system. You want to end the white supremacy, the police terror. You got to make a revolution. You want to end the way that it demonizes, criminalizes, and attacks immigrants. You got to make a revolution. You want to deal with the attacks on women and their rights. You got to make a revolution. You can't deal with that within this system. Same for the problem of the devastation of the environment of the very planet we live on and the imperialist wars that go down and with almost without end. You got to make a revolution to get rid of the system. And then the other part of that speech, he talks about how you could actually make a revolution, how you could gather the forces, how you could deal with the power of this system, what approach you'd have to take to that. People who don't want to live another day under this system, people who are tired of seeing black people killed one after another, because look, even while the 3 weeks during which the trial of Derek Chauvin was going down, the police killed 64 people in this country, most of them black or Latino. Some of the highlight, most well-known cases, Dante Wright, killed just 10 miles from where the trial of Derek Chauvin was going on. Shot by a cop who says, well, I was trying to tase him, and in fact, I even called my gun taser 3 times when I shot him. But didn't even need to be tasing him in the first place. It was over having the wrong sticker on his license plate and having air fresheners hanging from his rearview mirror. Adam Toledo, a 13-year-old boy, chased down the alley by a police who orders him to stop and show his hands. Adam stops and shows his hands and gets blown away by this pig. And there's a picture of him standing there with his hands up looking at the cop before he gets killed. And now Makaya Bryant, a black teenager in Columbus, I think she was 16 years old, shot down by a cop who got a 911 call to deal with a fight that was going on among some of the people. He shows up on the scene and he shoots Makaya. This is what this system does. And we can't go on living with this kind of thing. It can't be the case that being black or brown or indigenous can mean that your life can be snuffed out by some cop who's sworn to protect and serve, who then goes on to brutalize, terrorize, and maybe even murder other people. But stopping that is going to take revolution. And we have a leader who knows how to do that in Bob Avakian, and who's also authored a blueprint for the kind of world that people would want to live in. A world where those entrusted with public security because we're going to need to have a people's security force. But the people involved in that would be people who would sooner risk or lose their own lives than kill or injure an innocent person. Unlike the situation in the society today, where the trained professional law enforcement people are always given the benefit of the doubt when they brutalize or murder one of the citizens that they're supposed to be protecting.
Yeah, you know, it's so incredibly, I mean, it's everything you're saying points out the need for people to really recognize this and to do something about it. And I don't think we can just sit back and say, you know, we'll wait until next week. We'll wait until whenever, you know. It's sort of like people have to look at it now. They have to look, they have to understand that, you know, basically this is not an accident. These are not just a couple of, you know, sort of yahoos that got out and got drunk and decided they were going to go out and screw over everybody. This is actually a fascist grouping here. This is actually something, and not to separate them from the overall U.S., because we're talking about the U.S. itself. You know, that whole question of fascism is still a, let me see, it's still a debatable form, I guess, in the U.S. Who's going to do what with who or to who? And I think that that has a lot to do with what we're talking about today. You know, you're looking at people who are the horror of actually the kind of just really repressive things that are going on, what's happening, and people standing up against it, and how important it is that people do stand up against this stuff, and the things that you've been saying, how people do stand up against this, but also spread that and develop that and, you know, push it out much bigger. That whole kind of thing about what do we do and how are we going to do it? Where are we going to go? Just on that note, I wanted to see what you had to say about that, and we're going to have to wrap up after that. So,
okay, well, look. People were right and righteous to stand up last year when they murdered George Floyd. People are right and righteous to stand up when they murdered Dante Wright, to take to the streets when they murdered Micaiah Bryant. And that needs to go on, and it needs to get connected to taking on the system that recruits, orients, and trains the cops who carry all this out. Because they actually have the cops they want doing the job that they want them to do. We got to get rid of the system. It isn't like reform the police, get better training for the police, defund the police. It's get rid of this system through an actual revolution. And that's the connection that people have to make. They need to get connected with the force that's actually out there mobilizing and enlisting people into an movement for an actual revolution. And now is the time to do that. We can't sit around and wait, because the fight that's going on at the top of the system, and they tell you one thing about it and make it appear that maybe the Democrats are looking out for the people who want justice. But that is not the case. They're fighting over what's the best way to keep the empire in effect. That's the fight that the Democrats are having with the fascists. And both sides actually need a police force that can keep the people suppressed that they hate and fear. So we got to make that connection. And now's the time that that could be done. I know you're going to be talking about the May 1st revolutionary celebrations that are going to be happening all over the country. So I'm not going to try to give people all the details around this. But if you're somebody who wants to see an end to police getting away with murder, an end to the white supremacy that's behind that, an end to the attacks on women, the criminalization and demonization of our immigrant sisters and brothers, you need to come out to this May 1st celebration. Get connected with the Revolution Club. Learn about the revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian, and be a part of spreading that throughout society, because right now there's not nearly enough people who are part of this movement, but there are many, many people who want to see things fundamentally changed and need to know about this movement for an actual revolution and need to be challenged to get with it and challenged to get with the revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian. Because look, I've been a follower of Bob Avakian for a long time, decades. If you want to see a totally different and far better way for people to live, then the way to do that is to become a follower of Bob Avakian too. This is a man who could lead a revolution in this country. And revolution is what we've needed. To dig into that, one way is to come to the May 1st celebration, wherever you happen to be. You can also go to the website, revcom.us, and watch the Revolution Nothing Less show on the RevCom's YouTube channel. Premieres every Thursday at 5 p.m. West Coast time, 8 o'clock on the East Coast, and I'm not going to try to break down any more time zones because I'll probably get lost in that.
All right, Carl, you know, we're gonna have to wrap this up today, but I want to thank you very much for joining us. And you have anything you want to leave us with?
I just left you with what I wanted to leave you with.
All right, I just didn't know. I didn't know whether you had more to say or not. I've known you for a long time, and I've never known you to not have even more words to spit out at people, all right? So that's good.
I just wanted to leave it right where I left it, and thank you for having me on again, Michael.
All right, Carl. Talk to you again, man. Take care. All right, you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've been talking with Carl Dix from the Revolutionary Communist Party. Right now, I want to play a piece from Bob Avakian, B.A. As Carl said, he's the leader of the revolution, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, and this is nothing less a statement he made last summer during the Beautiful Uprising. So check this out.
This is Bob Avakian speaking. To all those who have risen up so powerfully and are demonstrating to say no more after the murder of George Floyd and all the other cold-blooded murders by police. To all those who have drawn inspiration from this righteous uprising. To all those who have had the blinders forced from their eyes and have been provoked to think anew about what kind of country it is that we live in. This has raised the biggest questions about what is needed for people everywhere to live fully as human beings. An end to institutionalized racism and murder by police, nothing less. An end to any way people anywhere are used, abused, and brutalized, nothing less. We need a world without white supremacy and male supremacy. A world where no one is regarded as alien. A world without war, where people from all over the globe, with a beautiful flowering of diversity, act together for the common good and are truly caretakers of the earth. This is not just a dream. The possibility for this is being powerfully demonstrated in this uprising of the people, of all different races and genders from all parts of the world, refusing to remain silent or stay passive while all this oppression and brutality goes on. To make all this real, we need revolution, nothing less. A strategic plan for how to make this revolution, and a sweeping vision and concrete blueprint for a radically different and much better world, where all this can become possible, can be found in the work I have done, including the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America. You can learn more about this revolution and become part of making it a reality by going to revcom.us and joining with the RevComs. We do not need to live in this world where so much of humanity suffers so unnecessarily under this system of capitalism imperialism that cannot exist without exploiting and degrading people, suffocating their humanity, and killing them without mercy. We can do much better. Don't listen to talk about how it can never happen. Look around you. What seemed impossible yesterday is happening right now. Revolution. Why should we settle for anything less?
That was Bob Avakian, chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, with Nothing Less. Now we're going to take a special musical break. This is Gil Scott-Heron with a ballad for José Campos Torres. And we're going to play that all the way through, so keep your ears open.
A poem for José Campos Torres. I had said I wasn't going to write no more poems like this. I had confessed to myself all along, chaser of life, poetry, trends. that awareness consciousness poems that screamed of pain and the origins of pain and death had blanketed my tablets, and therefore my friends, brothers, sisters, in-laws, outlaws, and besides, they already knew. But Brother Torres, common ancient bloodline Brother Torres, is dead. I had said I wasn't gonna write no more poems like this. I had said I wasn't gonna write no more words down about people kicking us when we're down, about racist dogs that attack us and drive us down, drag us down and beat us down. But the dogs are in the street. The dogs are alive, and the terror in our hearts has scarcely diminished. It has scarcely brought us the comfort we suspected. The recognition of our terror and the screaming release of that recognition has not removed the certainty of that knowledge. How could it? The dogs, rabid, foaming with the energy of their brutish ignorance, stride the city streets like robot gunslingers and spread death as night lamps flash crude reflections from gun butts and police shields. I had said I wasn't going to write no more poems like this. But the battlefield has oozed away from the stilted debates of semantics, beyond the questionable flexibility of primal screaming. The reality of our city, jungle streets and their gestapos has become an attack on home, life, family, and philosophy total. It is beyond the question of the advantages of didactic niggerisms. The motherfucking dogs are in the street. In Houston, maybe someone said Mexicans were the new niggers. In LA, maybe someone said Chicanos were the new niggers. In Frisco, maybe someone said Orientals were the new niggers. Maybe in Philadelphia and North Carolina, they decided they didn't need no new niggers. I had said I wasn't gonna write no more poems like this, but the dogs are in the street. It's a turnaround world where things are all too quickly turned around. It was turned around so that right looked wrong. It was turned around so that up looked down. It was turned around so that those who marched in the street with Bibles and signs of peace became enemies of the state and risk to national security, so that those who questioned the operations of those in authority on the principles of justice, liberty, and equality became the vanguard of a communist attack. It became so you couldn't call a spade a motherfucking spade. Brother Torres is dead. The Wilmington 10 are still incarcerated. Ed Davis, Ronald Reagan, James Hunt, and Frank Rizzo are still alive, and the dogs are in the motherfucking street. I had said I wasn't going to write no more poems like this. I made a mistake.
All right, that was Gil Scott-Heron with A Ballad for Jose Campos Torres. Now let's hear about International Revolutionary May 1st, all right? It's the thing that we've been talking about. It's a thing that people need to hear about, that people need to take part in. And it's about this. We are human beings. We refuse to accept slavery in any form. So let's take a listen to a little clip on that front.
From the RevComs, a declaration. A call to get organized now for a real revolution.
Let's get down to basics. We need a revolution, nothing less.
To everyone who can't stand this world the way it is, who is sick and tired of so many people being treated as less than human.
Who knows that the claim of liberty and justice for all is a cruel lie, who is righteously enraged that injustice and inequality go on and on and on, despite false promises and honeyed words from people in power or those seeking power.
Everyone who agonizes about where things are headed and the fact that to be young now means being denied a decent future or any future at all. Everyone who has dreamed about something much better, or even wondered whether that is possible.
Everyone who hungers for a world without oppression, exploitation, poverty, and the destruction of the environment. Everyone who has a heart to fight for something that is truly worth fighting for. You need to be part of this revolution.
This revolution is not just a good idea. It is actually possible.
What you just heard was the opening to a declaration, a call to get organized now for a real revolution. This call was put out by the RevComs, the group that is working now to gather the forces for such a revolution, the group that follows Bob Avakian, the most important political thinker and leader in the world today, a group that is inviting you to come out to Revolutionary May 1st celebrations across the country, in New York, in Los Angeles, in Houston, in Chicago, and elsewhere. Now let's pause and get clear. I did say you, Now, for many of you who watch our show regularly, you're thinking, of course, I'm going to be there. But I mean all of you, even if this is your first encounter with the revolution. If anything you heard in that invitation we just played from the RevComs speaks to you, then you need to be there. If you want to assert not only your own humanity, but the humanity of the 7.5 billion people on this planet who are dispossessed, driven like beasts and worse, then you need to be there. If you want to be part of declaring we are human beings, we refuse to accept slavery in any form, then you need to be there. If you want to meet the RevComs, an organized group, a revolutionary group with a whole revolutionary morality that we live by, you need to be there. And if you want to learn more about the leader of this revolution, Bob Avakian, in addition to doing the most important thing you can do, getting deeply into his books, his writings, his talks, and his films at RevCom.us, in addition to that, you need to be here with us on May 1st. Meet the followers of BA, talk with us, and learn more in that way as well. We are living in times when the future of humanity is being determined. What we do matters. So be with us on May 1st across this country. We have a world to win. We have nothing to lose but our chains. And the RevComs have been out across the country spreading the word about May 1st, inviting people into these celebrations. So we want to share with you some clips that show some of what we're doing and some of who we're meeting and some of who you will meet if you come out and join us on May 1st.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful message. We're all humans. We're all being made slaves to this system. And the system has got its knee on our necks. And May the 1st is the perfect opportunity for us to declare to the powers that be that we're not going to take it anymore. We're not going to sit down. We're not going to be herded like cattle. And we're not going to be murdered by droves.
Honestly, the message that y'all speak is, it speaks to me. We are human beings, and this system does not treat us like human beings. It exploits anyone who is underprivileged, women, people of color, the disabled, the poor. Literally anyone who is being taken advantage will be taken advantage of this system, and it does not treat us like human beings. So the message that y'all are speaking, it spoke to me.
The idea is we're all human beings, and we don't accept slavery, we don't accept racism, we don't accept the mistreatment of anybody for any reason.
I just love all of humanity so much. I can't stand to see people brutalized, tortured, oppressed, and not do anything about it.
This is Sierra Rios with Training Day. Dearest camaradas, the pigs who murdered Brother George and Brother Dante were both training rookie pigs who to hunt down, how to crush the spirits, the dreams, and how to suffocate the life out of precious human beings. We don't need more trained pigs. Humanity needs thousands of trained masses of people with the science of revolution. May 1st needs to be a training day of the people that give a fuck about humanity and the vibrant future that could be. A training day where all those people who hope for something different in the summer can see that they can contribute to something worthwhile. Hasta emancipación. We gotta show people the way forward.
You know, world can change in an instant if you seize that opportunity. I think you guys have, what's his name? Bob Avakian has done a pretty good job from what I've seen so far at identifying that point is right now.
The capitalist system is designed just to eat and just to consume people and to take advantage, and I'm not for that. I want a system that doesn't take advantage of somebody else and doesn't just try to make it so that there's always going to be suffering people. And at this point too, I'm prepared to, you know, educate myself more and to share that with as many people who want a better system and a better way to take care of themselves and their families and, you know, the world. because that's really what it's about. It's a whole world system. We want the whole world to feel this way. And I want to be part of a solution for the whole world.
This is an event that's extremely important for all of us to get involved with. We all need to be engaged, fighting the system that is oppressing so many of us. Throughout the U.S., throughout the world, keeping us in poverty.
You know, we're struggling, you know, we're going to jail, we're not getting the right jobs. I believe that a revolution is necessary.
We want to see the liberation of everyone, of blacks, of whites, Asians, LGBT, Indians, Latinos, Hispanics, everyone in the world, Africans. We want complete and absolute liberation of all oppression, of all affliction that we see in this world. We want a just world whereby all of us can enjoy the benefits that this world has to offer us.
Up to May 1st, what are you going to do to actually bring people to this very important international revolutionary celebration?
Well, I'm going to tell everybody I know about this. I'll probably put it on my Instagram, my Twitter, and then anybody who I know lives in the area and I know they can make it, I'll ask them, hey, I'd like if you come to this event and support our revolution.
All of my friends who I've been talking with recently, I've been letting them know what I'm gonna be doing, and I've been trying to invite them and get them together, because at this point, we're all tired of the way that this country treats us.
I will definitely be there, and this is the time, this is the time of opportunity. We need to take it.
All right, welcome back. That was a very moving thing. It was something I really wanted to get out there. And it's that was Sansara Taylor and many others from the Revolution Nothing Less show, which airs on YouTube channel, The RevComs, all right, every week. And there's a new episode every Thursday, and there are other clips posted during the week. So go to YouTube/TheRevComs and hit the bell and subscribe, all right? So right now, I want to introduce basically someone who's relatively new to the station, to the show, and she's done a piece that she's worked on a piece that was really very, very moving, I found. And her name is Dolly Veal, and well, I'm not going to say much more. I'm just going to let you know that she is there. She's going to be on that show. She's going to be doing this. She's going to be talking about this. So let's hear it now.
This is Dolly Veal, and I'm bringing to you today the emergency appeal. The lives of Iran's political prisoners hang in the balance. We must act now. This is a campaign called Free Iran's Political Prisoners Now, and it was initiated in the fall of 2020 in response to a call by the Burn the Cage, Free the Birds campaign in Europe. In their statements, they have made clear that the Islamic Republic of Iran's repression is not something new. And since the establishment of that regime 42 years ago, there have been constant and continuous campaigns of terror and suppression waged to crush and subdue years of opposition and rebellion of the people by utilizing all means of repression, prison, torture, execution, and mass executions. But something different happened in December 2017, particularly, and November 2019. These were extremely important developments. These rebellions oxygenated all of Iranian society and were taken by the fascist theocratic rulers as a potential threat to their whole system. The regime was and is dead serious about not allowing such an actual threat to their rule to go unpunished. They want to make clear that these upsurges do not get infused with the outlook and program of the most radical revolutionary societal change. So they made this call, the Burn the Cage, Free the Birds campaign, and some of us responded to it, like I said, in the fall of 2020. And because of monitoring the situation there, for the political prisoners, we felt in March of 2021, last month, that this campaign had to be put on an emergency basis. That's why it's called The Lives of Iran's Political Prisoners Hang in the Balance. We must act now. And our statement says, a brutal campaign of arrests, torture, and executions is now taking place in Iran. This is an emergency. The lives and dignity of hundreds of political prisoners are in imminent mortal danger. All those who stand for justice and yearn for a better world must rally to the cause of freeing Iran's political prisoners now. Beginning in October 2020, the Islamic Republic of Iran launched a massive new wave of arbitrary arrests against labor, women's, and human rights activists, dissident intellectuals and artists, protesters and revolutionaries, and members of religious and oppressed minorities. Many are now being tortured, held in solitary confinement, and denied legal rights, assistance, or medical aid as the IRI attempts to force confessions, conduct sham trials, and carry out brutal floggings. Amnesty International warns of an alarming rise in executions, with 49 prisoners executed between December and February. This regime has a blood-stained record of attempting to violently crush any form of dissent and resistance, including sudden mass executions of political prisoners as happened in 1988. We cannot allow this to happen again. Importantly, this repression has been met with inspiring heroism. Many prisoners, their families, supporters, and various Iranian organizations have been speaking out and demanding freedom for all Iran's political prisoners at great risk to their own safety. The Iranian Writers Association has denounced the execution of prisoners of conscience, even as it is under extreme repression. Several members are imprisoned, including Arash Ganji, sentenced to 11 years for translating a book on the Kurdish struggle in Syria. Journalist and Defenders of Human Rights Center member Narges Mohammadi was imprisoned for 8.5 years. She is calling for protests against the solitary confinement of the two brothers of Navid Afkari, the Iranian wrestling champion executed last year for being part of the 2018 mass rebellion. His brothers are sentenced to 54 and 27 years. The documentary film Nazreen, about imprisoned attorney Nazreen Sotoudeh, is an example of this nightmare of detentions and this implacable spirit of resistance. Iran's political prisoners face a dire, life-threatening, immediate emergency. Here are just a few other examples. A number of dual nationals from Europe, Australia, and the U.S. are being held in the political ward of the notorious Evin prison in Tehran. Amnesty International recently sent out urgent action alerts on two of these prisoners. Nahid Taghavi, rights activist, retired architect, and Iranian-German citizen, suffers from diabetes and hypertension. Her daughter, Marion Klarin, who has been on the Michael Slate Show, reports that her mother was kept in solitary confinement for 151 days and was interrogated 80 different times for a total of 1,000 hours during her first 147 days of imprisonment. And there are alerts from the Center for Human Rights in Iran about her deteriorating health condition. Same with Mehran Raouf, a British-Iranian citizen and labor rights activist, is being held in prolonged solitary confinement, according to Amnesty. Raouf has been denied access to his own lawyers in England and has no immediate family in Iran, and his safety has not been verified for many months. Women prisoners are increasingly transferred to more remote prisons, limiting access by their family and lawyers. These include Sepeda Golian, a freelance journalist arrested for reporting and allegedly taking part in labor strikes. In early March 2021, she was suddenly transferred in chains from Tehran's Evin prison to Bushehr prison in southern Iran, more than 373 miles from her parents. Somaya Kargar, a Kurdish activist and philosophy graduate of Tabriz University, arbitrarily detained since October 16, was moved from Evin prison to the even filthier suburban prison of Karchak outside Tehran. The regime is refusing to allow her to receive scheduled medical treatments in Paris, which could save her from blindness. All of Iran's political prisoners must be unconditionally and immediately released. The government of the United States and Iran act from their national interests. And in this instance, we, the people of the U.S. and Iran, along with the people of the world, have our shared interests as part of getting to a better world, to unite to defend the political prisoners of Iran. In the U.S., we have a special responsibility to unite very broadly against this vile repression by the IRI and to actively oppose any war moves by the U.S. government that would bring even more unbearable suffering to the people of Iran. We demand to the Islamic Republic of Iran, free all political prisoners now. We say to the U.S. government, no threats or war moves against Iran. Lift U.S. sanctions. As to what you can do, you can go to the website, freeiranspoliticalprisonersnow.org, endorse and spread this emergency appeal. Over 200 people have already endorsed it, including 11 former political prisoners from Iran. And it was recently signed by Jody Williams, 1997 Nobel Peace Prize laureate, and Gloria Steinem, author and feminist activist. We urge you to go to the website and sign it today. FreeIran'sPoliticalPrisonersNow.org.
All right, once again, that was Dolly Veal from the Emergency Campaign to Free Iran's Political Prisoners. And I want to thank everybody who was here who participated in this show today. I thought it was really, I was really moved by a lot of it, how it worked out and everything else. So we're going out with another very moving piece, Angelique Kidjo, How Can I Tell You? This is from the film Nazreen, a documentary about one of the political prisoners that Dolly just mentioned, Nazreen Sotoudeh. Talk to you again next week.
Tell you my truth, little one. How can I tell you the things I have done? Though I cannot see the sky, you know, I only think of you, and you shine for me more brightly than the sun. And how can I tell you the tears?